Welcome inside the Fantasy Sports Network studios. This is Fantasy Sports Today. This is Chris Meany. I'm Ashley Docking, and DeMarcus Cousins continues his reign of terror on the NBA last night.
What's wrong with that?
Getting
guy?
Two technical fouls, pushing a coach. An opposition's coach? Are you kidding me, bro? You can't do that. No. Anyway, racking up his 15th and 16th technical foul on the season, which means an automatic one-game suspension. And yes, the fines for technical fouls, well, they're not that much, but DeMarcus Cousins stands to lose over $150,000 for missing one game. Get it together, bro. Unbelievable.
It is. It really is. It's almost every other day with this guy. It's too bad. This guy, he has so much talent, so much skill. I just wonder if the Kings are going to part ways with him.
Not according to their GM.
I know. Not according to their GM. They don't want to trade him. I mean, I think he's the most talented big man in the game for sure. But yeah, as you said, just another. How about Dwayne Wade last night? Turning back the clock. That was nice.
Actually making a dunk this time?
Making a dunk.
That's nice.
he finished that dunk. He had the steal. That was nice. But yeah, for Cousins, I mean, here we are again. Another technical.
I know. It shouldn't come as a surprise. I agree with you. One of the most talented big men, if not the best in the entire league. He has racked up, in technical fouls alone, okay? I did some research.
Yeah.
$1.3 million that DeMarcus Cousins has surrendered due to his technical fouls. Now, granted, his career earnings are over $80 million, so it's a drop in the bucket. But at some point, you just got to understand that as the best player on your team, of a team who really does struggle, you need to be on the floor. You can't be making these emotional, ridiculous decisions time in and time out. I understand if it's his entry-level contract, he's new to the league, there's a lot of emotion, it's tough to lose all the time and be kind of like on the losing end of that. But then even when they won, when they beat Golden State, there was a video of him coming off the floor. There was a kid in a Golden State Warriors jersey, and he was like cheering for him, and he flipped him off. Double middle fingers, told him to go, you know what, to himself.
I know.
You're not a good representative or an ambassador for a league that's dealt with optics issues pretty much the entire time that they've been in business.
Yeah, there's no reason and there's no need for that. I mean, kids see that, you know, fans see that. And then, you know, remember earlier in the year, Russell Westbrook got flipped off by fans.
Yeah.
I mean, and you see stuff like that, and then more things like that are going to happen when you hear about, you know, Cousins flipping off kids. I mean, he's obviously got some kind of, like, he's mad. What is he mad about?
Yeah, why are you mad?
Like, why are you mad, bro? I mean, you're awesome. You're fantastic. I wonder if he's going to be a king for his whole career. I think that Sacramento should just go and trade him and get some pieces for him, but you're never going to get a good return for Cousins. But, I mean, between him and Mark Cuban, the NBA have gotten a lot of money from both of these guys for just attitude issues.
Most definitely for just saying what they want to say.
Yeah.
Let's change gears a little bit, because right now in our work fantasy basketball league, this guy and myself are going head to head. I am getting murdered 9-1. It's okay. It's still early.
It's still early.
But one of the reasons that Chris was able to jump ahead so quickly was because of Jrue Holiday. I believe he is on your roster, my friend.
He is, and I was willing to stash him, but there's always some concerns with Jrue Holiday. Yeah. If you look at the past 3 or 4 years, Ashley, when he plays, he's awesome. He's so great. And there's some rumors at the 76ers want him back, and they're going to go after him in the offseason, and that's exactly what they need, a nice point guard, even though Ben Simmons is coming back. But for Holiday, when this guy's on the floor, he's really, really good, and he's been really good lately, and he can put up those assist numbers, averaging close to 8 a game, and he can hit some threes, as you see there, 1.6, and the 30 points is like double what he's averaging on the year. But as of late, as you see there, he's been pretty productive. So, yeah, Jrue Holiday, hopefully a couple more games from him so I can rack up some more assists against you.
Yeah, especially with Tyreek Evans' ankle not expected to play on Wednesday against the Utah Jazz. And it's really nice to see on a bigger scope, not necessarily just in the basketball standpoint. At the beginning of the season, Jrue Holiday was on an indefinite leave. His wife, who was pregnant with their child, had to undergo surgery for a brain tumor. All that is good. That situation is locked up. Happy ending. And now he's on the floor producing, so it's always nice to see those stories. Love it. Okay, Deion Waiters did love it for a minute.
Yeah, he's so good.
He was out for ages, okay? He missed 16 games with a groin injury. Then he comes back, killing it. Well, as much as Deion Waiters can be, killing it, playing very respectably, and then seen in a walking boot.
Yeah, that's tough, because we've been telling everyone to go grab Deion Waiters, but obviously we didn't see this injury coming, so just keep an eye on it. If you're on the outside looking in a playoff spot, I would wait just to see if we, you know, with basketball, it's always day to day, day to day, day to day. It's like DeRozan, like, when's he going to come back? When's he going to come back? And you just don't know. He could miss two to 4 weeks. He could be back, you know, later this week. But he's been really good, as we mentioned, and what you said. He's been, you know, killing it with the three. So if you're in need of threes, sure. But if he's missing misses some time. Guy we didn't talk about yesterday, Yogi Ferrell.
Yep.
I saw somebody drop Seth Curry in a league. I was actually pretty shocked about that. He's been fine, hitting some threes, taking a lot of shots. Usage rate's been high. Tim Hardaway Jr. is another guy who's been getting some threes. So there are some guys out there on the waiver wire that can definitely help you out. And ESPN and Yahoo leagues, when you look at ownerships, I mean, Seth Curry could be owned in 80% of Yahoo leagues, but like 25 in ESPN. It's really, really weird. Can't figure that out. But that's why I just throw out Seth Curry. You might be like, hey, he's owned in all my leagues, but be surprised, he could be available.
Double check.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say. So Deion Waiters, although the threes are there, the assists have been pretty good, he's going to kill you in the shooting percentages. He's shooting 34 from three, and he's shooting 38 from the field in his 16 games since he's been back from his injury. Sorry, he missed 20 games with his injury. I inverted my games. Yeah. Missed 20, been back for 16. That's either way.
Right. Yeah, some leagues play with field goal attempts, field goal made. Yeah. So that a bonus for you in those leagues, Waiters, for sure.
Okay. We lost another good one, guys. And I'm not talking about death. That kind of was a bit ominous. But Claude Julien has been fired from his coaching duties with the Boston Bruins after an illustrious career there. Won a Stanley Cup, went to the finals. But they have missed the playoffs the last 2 years. They're on the brink of doing it again this year. So they've decided to change things up. Their assistant coach Bruce Cassidy will take the reins in the meantime until they figure out what to do. And knowing the NHL, the way things go, Ken Hitchcock will probably be their bench boss next year.
Yeah, this is not surprising to me. I think it's been a long time coming. You know, ever since Don Sweeney was named GM, usually actually when they bring in GMs, they want their own coach, and they're just looking for a reason to fire Julien. But you know, since 2014, some stats have come out. Since 2014, there have been 24 coaches, new coaches in the NHL. Yeah. That's crazy. He was the longest active coach, tenure coach. 10 years. This was his 10th season, but you're right. I mean, struggling, haven't made the playoffs. He played the most games in the Eastern Conference so far. They're outside of a playoff spot, 1 point outside. You know, but yeah, he's got a lot on his resume. I mean, over a 60% winning percentage in 10 years, which is phenomenal. He leads the Bruins all time in wins, 419. You mentioned the Stanley Cup, a runner-up Stanley Cup final, and then Jack Adams. So, I mean, he's going to get another coaching job. If it's not Vegas, I don't know where it could be. There's going to be a lot of coaching changes, I'm sure. There's going to be one in Colorado. I don't know if he'll want to take that job, but he's a great coach. He'll have another job.
He'll be fine. He'll be just fine. Hopefully, Evgeny Malkin will be fine. He's out with a lower body injury, not expected to play tonight against Calgary. He's already missed 4 games, but that's okay. The Penguins have won 3 of those games. Yeah. He's obviously someone that you're going to hold on to. You're not making any rash decisions, but disappointing that he hasn't been able to play. And avenge being left out of the top 100
Did
players.
Did you hear his quotes?
No.
His quotes are great. Like, it's not proper English, but it's still funny. He's like, maybe I just have to have a couple more cups, a couple more trophies, and next year the NHL will be in their 101st season, and maybe I'll be the 101st best player, and they'll send me a blue jacket. No, it's great. Yeah, Malkin's fine, but he hasn't played a full season since 2008.
Yeah.
So that's always concerning when you draft him, but yeah, he'll be back eventually. Pittsburgh's still rolling.
You want to talk about Brock Nelson?
Yeah, just Brock Nelson. Quickly, Brock Nelson. Islanders are playing good hockey. They're scoring goals lately.
Just beat the Leafs.
Beat the Leafs. Brutal start to the season. Andrew Ladd looks like just an awful signing. But Bailey picked up 3 points. We talked about a home ice advantage. We talked about Brock Nelson. We talked about Anders Lee. All of these guys chipped in. They had 6, 7, 8 points combined, all 3 of them. So, and they're widely available.
Nelson, 4-game point streak, 7 points in his last 6 games. We're going to stick with hockey on the other side of the break. Scott Cullen from TSN.ca joins us. We're going to talk expansion draft, the young Leafs, and their busy schedule. It's going to be exciting. This is Fantasy Sports Today. Thanks for sticking around with us. You're going to be glad that you did. It's time for some NHL talk because a lot of interesting things are about to happen. There's, of course, storylines in season that get your attention, but with the expansion draft coming up, that's going to be very interesting. There's a few teams in some tough, tough situations. So we bring in Scott Cullen from TSN.ca via phone to talk to us about the NHL situation. Scott, how's it going?
Great. How are you guys today?
Very good.
We're doing good, Scott. Thanks for taking the time to join us. Roughly a year ago, you and I talked about Shane Gostisbehere. He had played 1 game in the NHL, and we were gushing over his skill. We were telling everybody to pick him up. He was 0% owned in TSN, ESPN, Yahoo, all over the place. Ashley picked him up last year, won a fantasy hockey championship. How the times have changed, Scott. He was a healthy scratch last night for the 3rd straight game. He's near a minus 20. He's not producing, and when he plays, he's like 4th, 5th, 6th on the team among defensemen in ice time. If you're a Gostisbehere owner, what do you do with this guy, and what do you think's wrong with him?
One thing that has really changed from last year to this year for Shane Gostisbehere is that the percentages have gone the other way for him. As poorly as he's produced this year, and in his last 24 games, he has 9 points. 8 of them are on the power play, so he can still run your power play. Problem is, at 5-on-5, even though he has the best shot differentials among Flyers defensemen, he has by far the worst goal differentials, which means they're just getting scored on way too much when he's on the ice. And I don't know that you can attribute a whole lot to him other than, well, this is a really run of bad luck. Last year, he had a 103.2 PDO, which is a combined save and shooting percentage at 5-on-5. Well, this year it's 95.2. Like, 103.2 is really high, unsustainably high. You're not going to keep it at that level. Well, 95.2 is unsustainably low. You're not going to stay at that level either. And basically right now, Gostisbehere isn't getting the opportunity to work his way out of it and get the percentages to fall back in his favor. If you're an owner, it's tough to hang on to somebody who's getting healthy scratch three games in a row. But you kind of have to make the decisions based on the needs of your team and whether you can afford to kind of stash him on the bench until he gets his next opportunity.
It's actually quite unfortunate to watch this happen, someone that showed so much promise, but he seems to be a victim of high expectations when you just expect too much from someone who's so young. He still has 21 points, still a top 50 defenseman in terms of production, has 4 goals, still more than 10 players higher in the point category. So it's just really unfortunate to kind of see. I think it's more of a mental thing now at any point.
Yeah, Scott, there's some rumblings in Philadelphia that maybe he's playing through an injury and maybe he's just that, and also, teams have just adjusted to, his style of play.
Well, I think there's probably something to that. Is when he came in last year, he almost, burst into the league like a fireball, adding all this attacking style of play from the Philadelphia blue line, and certainly Philadelphia didn't have anyone like that before. And so, they were happy to have him make those contributions, because the percentages were working in his favor, he ended up, with a really productive rookie season. But coming into this year, he was one of the players that I was counting on not being able to produce as much as he did last year, just because the percentages were so high in his favor. It's really tough for that to continue into a second year. And so, the natural inclination is to talk about a sophomore slump, and there's probably something to that where the rest of the league kind of knows his game now. But at the same time, I think he's probably somewhere in between, what he's shown so far this year and what he was last year. The real Shane Gostisbehere is kind of in the middle of that with, and the player in the middle is probably still pretty good and should have a regular role in Philadelphia at some point.
He's buried in there somewhere. He's got to just claw his way out of there like those baby dinosaurs in Jurassic Park when you watch them get hatched at the beginning of the movie. Something along those lines.
Nice.
A little bit out of left field, but we'll take it. Some people who don't want to talk about sophomore slumps, not even close, are the Toronto Maple Leafs. They are getting some great production out of their rookies, the 4 young guys. Matthews, Marner, Nylander, Hyman, they've all been absolutely incredible. And to do it all together and not just have one guy necessarily standing out has been fun for fans to watch. However, the Toronto Maple Leafs are about to come onto a tough stretch. 31 games in 54 days, including 7 back-to-backs. That takes a toll on anyone. How in particular do you think these young guys are going to react to it?
Well, it was interesting when you talked about this tight schedule for the Maple Leafs. I went and looked up some numbers on the rookies, and most of them, their production doesn't really vary a whole lot based on days off. Matthews and Nylander are relatively consistent from whether you get back-to-backs or one day off, 2 days off. They're sort of in the same ballpark. But Mitch Marner is an interesting one to watch because in 11 games where they've had 0 rest, so back-to-back games, he has no goals and 5 assists, which, otherwise in the rest of his other 39 games this year, he has 39 points. Like, that shows you he's a real high-end elite scorer, but the results in those 11 back-to-back games haven't been very good. Now, at the same time, we don't want to completely write this off because he is averaging more shots per game in those back-to-backs. He's averaging about 3 per game as opposed to 2.4 otherwise. So when you're looking at that 11-game sample, you might say, well, that's a little bit of a small sample. You don't want to be assured that Mitch Marner isn't going to be able to produce. But to me, the fact that he's been much more productive when he has more rest makes him at least a player to watch down the stretch here, because, you know, the way this schedule condenses for the Maple Leafs, if they're going to be playing that many back-to-backs, and you know, if it's you know, three games and four nights and things like that, to see whether or not Marner is going to be able to kind of continue. I mean, he's the leading rookie scorer right now. Is he going to be able to keep that pace, or is it going to catch up to him? And, you know, look, the season in Marner's case has almost found money already. You know, before the season, the over-under on points for Marner at Sportsbooks, they had him at 39.5. Well, wow. he's already blown past that, yeah. And is, you know, as I said, leading all rookies in scoring, but it will be interesting to see if he can keep it going as the schedule condenses.
Yeah, it's interesting, though, that you say that 11 games is a small sample size, but it's still 21% of their schedule, so I think that there is some weight to it, and I like that you went back and looked at the back-to-back scoring. I did the same thing, just for numbers' sake, 146 points for the four young guys that we mentioned. They've had 25 points in those 11 games, so it's equated to 17% of their total output.
So the kids can score.
The kids can do it. Their kids are all right.
Scott, before we get you out of here, let's talk about the goaltending situation, because Frederik Andersen has allowed at least 5 goals in 3 straight games after back-to-back shutouts, now 19 goals allowed in 4 games, and obviously the defense is not helping him out. Do you have some concerns with Andersen, and come trade deadline, do you think that the Leafs are going to do anything to, you know, pick up a defenseman, or is it still kind of like in basketball with the 76ers, just trust the process?
That's a good question. I think, for one, you know, they've been working Frederik Andersen really hard, and I don't know whether, you know, he's really up for the workload that, you know, if he ends up playing 68 games or 70 games or whatever he's on pace to do, I think you're going to run into some stretches where, you know, he struggles like this. And a lot of that has to do with, well, do you trust your backup goalie enough? And look, they certainly didn't trust Jonas Enroth. They've gotten better results of Curtis McElhinney, but that's just in a couple of starts. I'd be surprised if they went and did anything with the goaltending. I think they're going to kind of give Andersen a heavy workload, spot in McElhinney when they can, and I won't be surprised if they the Maple Leafs do something on their blue line. But at the same time, I do think that it's not the kind of thing where they're going to sacrifice a whole bunch of future assets to do it, because you know, I think they expect that they're going to be able to make the playoffs without, you know, overhauling their roster. You know, won't have to make a dramatic move to still be a playoff team, and so I think that kind of gives them the confidence to, as you say, trust the process, that you can worry about, you know, making a blockbuster move on defensive. You can do that in the summer, you know, and I think the, you know, the popular name that gets thrown around sometimes is Kevin Shattenkirk, and I think the Maple Leafs, they could certainly use him. You know, he can quarterback a power play for them and could play 22 minutes a night in, you know, in a moment's notice on this Maple Leafs blue line, but I'm not sure that Toronto is prepared to give up, you know, the assets that they would need to in order to get him now, as opposed to waiting in the summer and signing him as a free agent.
Yeah, I think that any team could use 36 points from their blue line. I agree with you, Scott. Okay, we got to get out of here, unfortunately. You'll have to come back and join us and talk about this expansion draft. It's going to be very exciting. But in the meantime, have a great week.
Great. Thanks a lot, guys.
All right, take care. Yeah, I could talk to him. We need a couple more minutes with Scott next time.
Yeah, because the draft is super, super
The expansion
interesting.
Draft is going to be
we'll
real
get into
interesting.
That come closer to deadline.
Sounds good. A lot of fireworks. We're going to switch gears and do some PGA talk with our favorite, the Tour Junkies, on the other side of this break. Welcome back. It's the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am this weekend, and what a perfect way to kind of start with that theme with our pro golf analyst, and we're the amateurs, and Pat Perry from the Tour Junkies is going to get us started.
Well, as always, I appreciate you having me on, Chris and Ashley. Yeah, so we're at the Pebble Beach Pro-Am this week. This is the second Pro-Am event and the last Pro-Am event, thank the Lord, on tour. You got 3 courses that they're going to be on: Pebble Beach, Spyglass, and Monterey Peninsula Country Club. You know, all about 6,900 yards. Very small greens on here on these courses. We're going to be looking at kind of our main stat categories are strokes gained approach, also birdie or better percentage, and then proximity because of those small greens. We want to look at those players that are, you know, not only hitting the greens but hitting it closer to the hole. because of the small greens this week. You know, you got some, you know, right up at the top, you know, I'll get right into it. My two favorite are the very top players in Jordan Spieth and Dustin Johnson. Jordan Spieth has incredible course history here. He's been knocking on the door. I think this is the year he'll actually get a win. He checks all the boxes on all the stat categories that we're looking at, and so does DJ. So, you know, in most of my lineups, I'm really gonna play those guys as kind of my core anchor players this week.
Yeah, Pat, I was just going to ask you if these top-tier guys have to win to return value, and I'm glad you touched on some of the key stats because it looks like there's some rain in the forecast. I mean, today, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, does that change anything with your strategy?
It does a little bit, and I'm glad you brought up the weather. I always talk about the weather on our podcast, and we tend to look at it more closer towards the end of the week on Wednesday, and then when tee times come out. But this week, I do think the weather is going to play a factor, especially in the first two rounds on Thursday and Friday. And so I'm going to want to look at when the tee times come out, who has which wave as far as the afternoon versus the morning, because I think the winds are going to pick up a big amount in the afternoon. So that is going to be an important factor this week.
All right. You talked about some of your stars. You like the two most expensive guys. That means you have to go dumpster diving to kind of fill out your roster. Who are you looking at on the cheaper end?
Two guys I really like, very cheap. Sean O'Hare, who I don't mention too often, but he has great course history here. He's a birdie machine. He checks the box on birdie or better percentage for us. I think he's a good GPP play and cash. I would lock him into your lineups, especially if you're going to play those higher price guys. Shane Lowry. I was on him last week or the last few weeks. Been playing really well. This is a good course for him. He checks every single box that we're looking at from a stat category. So I really like Shane Lowry at 7,000. I think he's good value.
All right, fades. We need some fades. A lot of people talking about J.J. Spahn in the office, but is this just kind of a wait-and-see approach with him?
You know, normally I think he would be a good play this week, but we're fading J.J. Spahn. I think he, again, he's got great recent form, but he hasn't played on Poana Greens, you know, as far as the Pebble Beach tournament. So I think, you know, I'm going with experience this week. I want guys who played these greens, who've played this course. And to me, that just means fade Spahn. I mean, and he's also had an $1,800 price increase over the last 3 weeks. So just not liking his price. And I think a lot of people are going to be on him this week, but he's going to be a fade for me.
Okay, we got about a minute left, Pat. You mentioned experience. I mean, does it make you want to pick, you know, Snedeker or Mickelson, who have had success here before? Maybe one and done plays with those two?
Yeah, I think actually Mickelson is my one and done play this week. So I do like him. Again, great course history here. He almost won last year. Should have probably won. Missed a putt on the 18th hole to win the tournament. And so I think, again, you can't go wrong with Phil. And that's a good price for him at 9,300. You typically don't see that with somebody who's got recent form, who's a great course history, and obviously has good experience here. So I think Phil Mickelson is a great play.
I just want to talk to you quickly because we have about 30 seconds left. But Patrick Reed is someone who's interesting. Although he shot a 76 at the Waste Management Phoenix Open on his final round, 7 bogeys. Is this a bounce back candidate? Everyone likes a rags to riches story.
He is our from trash to treasure play of the week. We think that Patrick Reed is going to be lower owned than he should. He's down at 8,300. Checks the boxes for us on strokes gained approach, birdie or better percentage. So I think, you know, Patrick Reed is a great play, and you can't go wrong at that price. So, yeah, we are all over him this week.
Well, you're our favorite play in terms of the Tour Junkies. Don't tell Dave that.
Oh, you tell him.
You tell him.
I will tell.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. Good luck this weekend, Pat.
All right, thank you.
Take care.
And we're sorry about your Falcons.
Oh.
It's a hair of laughing.